Good morning, and thank you all for coming. My story begins with secondary spider mite outbreaks that follow after imidacloprid applications. And the first time this phenomenon was described by Casey Sklar on honey locust, and since then we've seen it on many ornamental plants. And this phenomenon also occurs for mites from different genera within Tetranychidae. Tetranychus, Oligonychus, and Eurytetranychus. And also, recently, we found this to be true for mite from a different family, Eriophyidae. We have documented the spider mite outbreaks quite extensively over the years. These graphs show comparison of mite abundance on elm trees treated with imidacloprid in Central Park, New York, and University of Maryland College Park. In all sampling years, as you can see, between from 2005 to 2007, at both sites, we have seen increased spider mite abundance in gray bars here on treated elm trees. And sometimes this difference is quite dramatic, as you can see. So what are the hypotheses that have been proposed to explain the outbreaks? The first one is disruption of natural enemies. And Casey Sklar and Smith and Kirschick published key papers here early on, and my own lab mate Scott Curry just completed a very exciting research that shows some effects of deleterious effects of imidacloprid on natural enemies as well. The second set of hypotheses deals with enhanced mite performance, and first one here proposes hormolagosis, an increase in mite fecundity, and the key paper was published by James and Price in 2002, and they showed increased fecundity of mites, whereas Acco and colleagues published two papers to the contrary. And because of the difference in results, I followed their lead here and repeated the experiments. I used elm plants, and I treated imidacloprid. I treated elm trees with imidacloprid and exposed mites to treated and untreated foliage. What I found was that fecundity of spider mites that were exposed to treated elm trees was significantly higher than fecundity of mites feeding on untreated leaves, and I found no difference in how long they lived. I repeated this experiment with a little difference. I took the plant effect out of the picture. I applied imidacloprid directly to the mite through topical application, and I found no difference in fecundity or longevity. So this is a very important piece of information. It seems like that the effect the imidacloprid has on the mite is plant-mediated. So what are the two most parsimonious answers here? Why that could be happening? It's either the mites like the plants better, they're better nutritiously, or the plants are not defended as well. And you know, plants know very well what we will have to learn because of the economic crisis. You can't have it all. You can't both grow and defend yourselves. And growth differentiation balance hypothesis shows this really nice graph of how plants that grow nicely are not defended as well. So this introduces another hypothesis for why outbreaks could be happening. Improved nutrition or reduced defenses that enable mites to outbreak. And this is the focus of what I'm going to talk about today. I needed to model organisms because it's not very easy to do this with elm plants, and I chose tomato for an obvious reason. It's very easy and fast to grow, but also because I found some link between what I see for mites feeding on imidacloprid-treated plants in the landscape and desmonic acid-deficient tomato plants and mite performance on those plants. And this was the greatest fishing expedition of my graduate career. But I found some evidence early on that led me to stay on this track. I found mites that fed on tomato, reports of mites that fed on tomato-deficient, on desmonic acid-deficient plants to do better, lay more eggs, and have a greater egg hatching rate. We also know that mite feeding elicits expression of genes involved in desmonic acid and salicylic acid pathways, and foliar applications of those two have been found to decrease the feeding rate and fecundity of mites. Before I could jump into the exciting part of my experiments, I had to do some mundane work to show a connection between the landscape plants and my model organisms, so that whatever I learned in tomato, I could relate back to the landscape plants. So I basically had to show that imidacloprid causes mite outbreaks on tomato plants, and that fecundity is also elevated on tomato plants treated with imidacloprid. And I found just that, thankfully. The mites that were on treated tomato plants, I found significantly higher numbers of mites that were feeding and living on those plants than on control plants. And then when I looked at fecundity in this experiment, I treated imidacloprid. I applied imidacloprid to tomato plants and then offered them to mites. I found significantly higher fecundity here in gray bars for those mites that were feeding on tomato-treated plants, on imidacloprid-treated plants. I found no difference in longevity, and if you remember, this is exactly what I found for the experiment where I applied imidacloprid to the elm trees and then offered it to mites. So this was pretty exciting. With that, I could move to looking at defense pathways and how they're, if they are disrupted by imidacloprid application. My hypothesis was that expression of selected genes involved with inducible desmonic acid pathway are affected by the application of imidacloprid. And how I did this, I had tomato plants growing in a greenhouse. My experiment was a 2x2 factorial with two levels of insecticides and herbivore present and absent. I applied imidacloprid at label rate and had 20 spider mites that I moved to leaves of each plant and allowed to feed for 5 days to induce the defenses. And I replicated the experiment 3 times. The genes that I chose are involved in desmonic acid pathway and salicylic acid pathway, and cathepsin D inhibitor is aspartic proteinase, pathogenesis-related protein, PR, in salicylic acid pathway, and wound-induced proteinase inhibitor 2 in salicylic and desmonic acid pathway. My control, my reference gene, was elongation factor EF1 alpha. I extracted RNA using a mini kit from QIAGEN, very easy to use, and I use one-step RT-PCR to take the RNA that I extracted, reverse transcribe it into cDNA, and then amplify it using PCR. And again, what I expect is to see decreased expression of those genes when I apply imidacloprid. And the giant leap of faith paid off. Let me tell you what you see here. These are the results for cathepsin D inhibitor. At the bottom is my reference gene, my positive control. On the left, you see results for experiments that didn't involve any mites, and then here are plants that also had herbivore feeding on them. In a control plant, in imidacloprid plants without any mites, I had some expression of the cathepsin D inhibitor. When the plants were exposed to the herbivore, there's enhanced of expression of this gene for control plants, but none of that for the imidacloprid plant. Thank you. Another gene pathogenesis-related protein, even a more exciting result. I have expression of this gene for the control plant without herbivore, and almost for the herbivore and with no herbivore and with herbivore, and none of the expression when the imidacloprid was applied to the plant. Whoops, I didn't know I could do that. And as Rolling Stones say, you can't always have what you want. I did not find anything exciting for proteinase inhibitor 2. So to conclude, there is a differential expression in plants that receive imidacloprid treatment, and the genes that show this are regulated by both desmonic acid and salicylic acid, but because the pathway, there's a lot of relationship and crosstalk between the pathways, it's difficult to untangle which pathway is affected until we have more information. And where I'd like to go from here, I'd like to look for expression differences in other genes from these pathways and look at precursors of salicylic acid and desmonic acid. And ultimately take it back home, find out if these expression differences hold true for woody ornamental plants where we have first seen the outbreaks. And with that, I'd like to thank the funding agencies and everyone who helped with this, and I'll take any questions.